And then also next Tuesday on our regular board meeting, our board will be finalizing our comments on this particular topic. So tonight won't be our, you know, kind of closing comments or anything like that. But you're welcome to come back next Tuesday and listen to us deliberate and offer your comments. And I think that's it. So without further ado, Gary, is that
right? Okay. Thanks, Dan. So the Open Space and Trails Board thought it would be sort of a nice way to begin this meeting by inviting Kenny Frost up here. Some of you may know Kenny. He's an elder with the Ute Tribe. Kenny consults with the Indian tribes. He consults with the state and federal agencies on Indian matters that range from water issues, natural resources, education, jurisdiction, as well as archaeology. And I thought it was just really fitting and appropriate for Kenny to come up here tonight and say a few words and perhaps lead us into a Ute prayer to start off the evening in a very respectful tone. So, Kenny? Good evening, everyone. Wow, this microphone works good. I want to welcome each and every one of you here, citizens of Valley. It gives me great honor and to be able to speak to each and every one of you and to the respective board members who are here from the various boards. My name is Kenny Frost. I've worked with the federal agencies in and around this area. I've worked on the Ute Trail, and I've identified a lot of the sacred religious sites along the National Forest area, as well as on some of the private lands of some of the landowners here in the valley who have allowed me to come onto their property because they had some special places that they thought was sacred to the Ute people long ago. And when I identified it as such, they were happy that they did preserve and protect it. But the one thing I want to say and want to mention to each and every one of you who are private landowners, as well as the board members here, and particularly to Pitkin County, both the city and county commissioners, is that the people here and those who govern the county for such a long time, for well over 25 years that I've been working with the people here in Carmondale too as well, and the county commissioners in Glenwood, that the preserving and protecting of the Ute sites has been very overwhelming. And this is one of the very special places that the Utes, pretty much with Glenwood, was the heart of Ute country. Now with the county commissioners and city council of Aspen, as well as Carmondale here, they've always been on the forefront in protecting the Ute sites and also have been on the forefront of protecting those sites compared to other counties and city councils in the United States. So they have always been the leaders in the protection and doing what is right, particularly for the Native people. But the other thing too that's most important is that also includes the general membership or the people who reside within this area here too as well. So I want to commend each and every one of you, because your landowners and who may not be here have been protecting a lot of the Ute sites, and this is one of the special places and probably one of the places in Colorado that many of our sites are still intact today. And many of the people, particularly the landowners, have taken it upon themselves to protect such sites. So you should be very proud of your neighbors and maybe even some of you who I've met for over 25 years who are still here. You know, I want to say thank you for that. The other thing too is the actual site itself, because I've walked a good portion of the Ute Trail, the wagon roads that traversed over and on top of the Ute Trail, the wagon trail, I mean the train routes is also on top of the Ute Trail, the old Stagecoach Trail from Independence Pass coming down into Aspen. I walked that, and the late Bob Lewis hired me to identify that trail, and I gave him the map. And so a lot of people have put a lot of work in here, and from what I see and what I've from being here today is a lot of people have been wanting to do the right thing in preserving and protecting those sites. But the other thing too is we have wildlife and special trails that also the game does come through. Now, I've been involved with the Front Range with the trails there, and there's a lot of special areas in there that I want to make mention is that a lot of the people thought that once the trail comes into the Boulder, Denver area, the impact from outside people putting homes there were some of the things that was brought out in the very beginning. So I was up on the Front Range for a multitude of meetings and watched and learned, as well as identified a lot of the Native American sites there from some of the other Indian tribes who congregated there in the Front Range, not only Utes, but a lot of the Indian tribes, at least 26 different Indian tribes, and some of those sites are still there today. So a lot of those concerns in the very beginning really didn't happen. The influx of people who were thought to move into that general area didn't really transpire. And the trespassing of different things never did happen either. So those are really legitimate concerns, and you have every right to be concerned about it. But at the end, it never did happen. The game still came, the birds still came, even though there was, at the time of the construction, sure, there was that interference of where they were coming and going. But then once it was complete, they still came. So that was one of the concerns that I've noticed, that wildlife, it's much more easier to please compared to us as humans. And they're going to do what they've been doing for thousands of years and still traverse where they walk or where they flew, because that's instilled within their DNA of who they are as animals and wildlife. So I wanted to make mention of that, only because I've been involved in a lot of the trails across the state of Colorado. So one of the things I would like to say in my prayer as I'm going to start the meeting in a good way, because we all came here. We came here with our concerns. You have the governing body and the board here who represent each and every one of you here, who will always look after your interests as well as their interests too as well, because they're landowners too and always want to do the right thing. And I'm really honored to be able to speak to each and every one of you, because many of them I've had known for 25 years, and it's good to see that they're still active and serving their community. So if you'll please rise and while I say this prayer. Yenamonam Duaya Panikidi Mamchu Mucho Duwachu. Creator, we stand here. We have come here to this building. We have come here as citizens and people of the valley with our concerns, our questions. We have come here to address those needs and concerns in a good way, never to utilize our voice in a meaningful way, but in a calm way to address our concerns. We have come here to address our concerns always with reflection of what's good for Mother Earth. We have come here to support those who protect our concerns, the board members of the various councils, commissioners, as well as council people. But as we speak tonight, we always remember of the people who were once living here, the Ute people, as this is the homeland of the Utes. Many of our places that we once had and lived have been destroyed. But there are many things that we have here that are still evident of our ancestors. that those things that we use, that we have, and still there today, are still there for the pleasure of the people, to help the people to understand the traverse of those trails and paths. That as long as the people are utilizing those trails, they are keeping that trail a living history and alive today. Our people, as the Ute people, have never been forgotten, as long as the people have used those things in a good way. The spirits of our ancestors, the Ute people, are still here walking those trails. The people here, each and everyone who's here up and down the valley, have always been protective of the ancestral trails and those sacred places without knowing it. And we say thank you to Creator to hear those prayers, to give each and everyone the blessing and thanking them that without the people, those places that were once used by the ancestors will always be there, protected and used in a good way, and for the comfort of all people who come here in the generations to come, that they will also enjoy those things that my ancestors enjoyed long ago. And it is those that we preserve and protect, to continue protect, that these places will be enjoyed by all who come within this valley. And we say good blessings to each and everyone up and down the valley, and to those in the future generations to come, to also pay homage and protect those sacred areas as we discuss this tonight, with the thought of protecting and utilizing these places in a good way, in a special way, and that we can come together and work together as one unit with good thoughts and prayers. We say this, Creator. Hear our words as we speak. Aho. Dwayak.
I'm going to have Gary Tenenbaum come up. And Gary, again, is the director for Open Space and Trails Program. He's just going to let you know how the process has gone to date and where the process will go in the future.
You got it?
Sorry about that. So I'm Gary Tenenbaum. I'm the director of Open Space, and I truly didn't want to follow Kenny. He's a tough one to follow. But I do appreciate everyone. You know, the one thing we have seen through this public process and many others is there's a passion. People have a passion. And I see passion for trails. I see passion for open space. I see passion for connecting communities. And tonight, you have an incredible table that I've not really seen, to be able to have all trustees for three jurisdictions to be here, which is really pretty incredible. So thank you all for coming. And to give kind of a quick introduction, you know, this is the Carbondale Crested Butte Trail has been talked about since 1994. And, you know, in 2004, there was a feasibility study done by the Scenic Byway. And that feasibility study led to a 2006 GOCO grant from the town of Carbondale was part of it, Pickens County was part of it, Garfield County was part of it, and it was to preserve some critical open space and to construct the first 5 miles of the Carbondale Crested Butte Trail. And once that was completed in 2011, you know, we kind of let it go for a little while because we had other priorities throughout Pickens County. But in 2016, the governor of Colorado came out with the Colorado the Beautiful vision. And his vision is really, you know, within a generation, every Coloradan will live within 10 minutes of a park, trail, or vibrant green space. Sounds really amazing, and it's coming from the governor of Colorado. And, you know, to basically make this happen, they came up with a statewide trail strategic plan, and that really is you know, kind of a, it's a constitutional right in a way to have everyone in Colorado should have easy access to a trail, park, or open space, and a large majority of Coloradans enjoy trail recreation regularly, and frequent trail use improves people's health, contributes to local economies, and remains an important quality of life indicator for Colorado. And so that came to Colorado 16, was the governor went through Colorado and identified the 16 big trail gaps in the state. And, you know, obviously the objectives, I'm not going to go through every one, but one of the things is connectivity. And connectivity is huge. And connecting communities to trails to other communities is a huge component. And it's part of, like, you know, a better connected network of trails and, you know, safe transportation routes. And so, you know, there was a lot of project selection criteria on it. And, you know, we worked with the Department of Natural Resources and Colorado Parks and Wildlife on all of these aspects of it because, you know, CPW is the wildlife management expertise in the state, but and DNR has a lot of trail planning experience. But we also, one of the big things about the state is trying to find funding for all of this. And a lot of the funding is coming through the State Trails Program and the Great Outdoors Colorado, which are the lottery funds. And so the Carbondale Crested Butte was selected as one of the 16 trail projects. And that led to the county, Picken County, to put in a planning grant to GOCO. And GOCO gave the county $100,000 to start planning the next phases of the trail. And so that gets into this trail plan process. I know you're not going to be able to see this. I'm going to get a zoom in a second. But the trail planning process really started at the beginning of the year. And, you know, through public meetings and through the trail planning grant and extra Picken County funding to create all the reports and all the, you know, website material that you can see on our website. And so the trail plan process basically got to the point where we're at now. And so at the beginning of September, the county released the first, you know, released the consultant reports and put on their website all the story maps and started to do, you know, some public presentations. Our consultants did presentations. We recorded the consultant presentation on September 8th in Carbondale. That's on our website. You can go see it tonight or anytime you want. And, you know, one of the things that we just want to stress is this is the concept phase. This is the beginning phase of it all. The Picken County Board of Commissioners and the Open Space and Trails Board has not had discussions on this trail as of yet. They are in the learning phase, they are in the listening phase, and that's why we want to make sure we get as much public comment as we can. And so we have extended it twice. The public comment period goes now all the way to November 15th, and, you know, we want to find every way possible to get your comment. Because tonight is a way to talk directly to them, but we really want written comments because written comments are in stone and they get all the way through the process. They come all the way through the process and they can be read. You know, we do take your names off the public comments so you can feel free to write what you want. And so we've seen that in the past. We want you to be free to say it without worrying about, oh, this person said this person said that. So please make that public comment. Even if you make a public comment tonight, please either write an email from our webpage or do the survey, something. Write them down. We'll pick them up. We want to make sure that the public comments are recorded. And so what happens next? So tonight we have obviously the joint meeting and a public forum for you guys to provide public comments directly. And then after the public comment period is over on November 15th, staff will compile all these public comments and put them into a draft plan. And the draft plan, you know, now that we moved public comment, the draft plan will come out in January. And then we're going to do this all over again because we'll have all that information out to the public, and in that draft plan will be a draft alignment. And it will take into all your comments, it will take into all the consultant reports, And that's when the Open Space Board and the BOCC will start discussing this to make sure they're on board with the direction. We'll go through a 60-day public comment period again next year, and then come in late March or early April to see if we can get to a preferred alignment. And once that preferred alignment's done, it's not done, because we still have more public comment, because anything that's on federal land or CDOT right-of-way, there's a whole NEPA analysis, National Environmental Policy Act analysis. There's obviously potential negotiations that have to be had, so that'll be a whole process onto itself. So hopefully everyone signed in, because your email will be used to keep you guys informed of the process going forward. And so here's how to comment. This website, picketosdprojects.com, has all the information that is produced and is available for you guys to do it. Staff has been happy to talk to anyone who has questions, specific questions. We can get you answers, so feel free, we're accessible. And with that, I'd like to turn it back to George.
Thanks, Gary. So we've got about 45 people who signed up to make comments. If we figure about 3 minutes apiece, we're in the twilight hour. So I don't know if if trustees want to have any questions we want to record for the consultants to get back to, or any comments, Dan?
Yeah, let's just start down the line. We'll start with Luis and work this way.
Sure. Thanks, Dan. Skimmed over the alignment proposed, and to me, I think the biggest concern from the public that I've heard is the Kaloha Meadows, which seems to be the most sensitive area. So to me, that seems to be an overriding concern with what this trail seems to present. So I'm curious to get more information about that and how that's going to be dealt with.
Hi, Marty Silverstein. Well, I'll start with the first thing. You're operating on the premise that we need this trail. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that premise. Second thing is, having read through the 350 pages that I was given, we had a cost of somewhere between $20 million and $115 million, which seems like an awful lot of money to me. And this is just to implement the trail. This isn't to maintain. I believe I'm correct in that so far. I have a concern for Carbondale, specifically about Nettle Creek. That's one of our sources of water. There are also about 20 families that live there, and that's their source of water. So I have concerns on the impact on the Nettle Creek area. Kaloha Meadows, as Louise mentioned, I'm very concerned about that. The effect on wildlife, both flora and fauna. In reading the consultants' reports, they keep on speaking about how they're going to mitigate the effect. Well, if you mitigate the effect, that means that there obviously is an effect. And I understand this is a non-motorized trail, but if someone violates the rules, they're going to be issued a summons. Well, a summons doesn't do any good after the rules have been violated. So these are just my concerns. I know I have not spent the time or energy that some of these people have put in over the years to get to this point. But those are some of my concerns that I just want to voice, and I look forward to learning more, and maybe some of those questions can be answered.
So is this the proverbial bite at the apple, George, right now for the trustees?
For this part of the process.
Okay, very good. So, you know, I've been a Sierra Club member since 1977, so you have an idea where I've probably kind of come down on this issue. I'm very concerned about our diminishing wildlife in Colorado, specifically in this area. If you read the letter from Kevin Wright, who is has retired from DOW, it's in the packet tonight. He puts the statistics out there. There's no need in me in reinforcing those. I think it's interesting that we talk about the Ute Trail and the sacred sites that are along there. However, when Colorado was admitted to the Union in 1878, I think, we had a population of 33,000 people. The population today is somewhere north of 5.5 million. So there's a big switch about how many people are going to be using this trail and where's our wildlife habitat going to. And that doesn't even consider what global warming is going to do in the next 5 or 10 years. We're already seeing it. My home state of, in the south where I'm from, Louisiana, we're already seeing what's going on down there. And that's unexpected. We're going to see more unexpected things happen up here, whether it's wildfires burning more frequently, hotter, whatever. We're seeing that in California. The question I have, though, and I know that we probably want me to quit talking about that part of it. I'm open to listen to this. I've ridden the highway on my road bike before I had back surgery 6 or 8 times from Carbondale to Redstone, so I don't know why you have to do a whole lot of over-engineering to make a safe trail. I want to have a trail, but you can ride that trail from Carbondale to Redstone. I've done it. I know Jay still does it. So the difference between the wildlife impact of one trail versus the other is 100 acres of effect on wildlife habitat one way, 800 the other. That's 8 to 1. That to me, as a person who will speak for wildlife, not unlike George Newman, who said 7 or 8 years ago when we had a joint meeting with the Carbondale trustees and the Picton commissioners, George said he would always speak for wildlife. So I may have now stepped into that role because I'm not sure, but I will speak for wildlife going forward. I'll always do that, and I feel like that's the way I'm wired. You know, we've just passed an EBOR. I know Picton County has one, Environmental Bill of Rights. It addresses wildlife and their rights as well as people's. And the last thing I'll say is that when I had my first CPA job, the old senior partner I went in that hired me, when I went into his office, I was really overwhelmed and in awe by this guy because he was so smart and he had been around for a long time. I was fresh out of college. And he threw the tax manual out on the desk and said, "You read this?" I said, "No, I haven't." He said, "Well, read it. Read it." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "And the other thing I want you to know is we're going to do it right or we're not going to do it at all." So that's what I'll say.
Thanks, Frosty. I guess taking on the last piece of what Frosty said, I would love to see, and it's been brought up, that analysis of the third sort of no trail alternative, because we already have two very wildly different alignments, but I don't think it's been sort of looked at to say what does the no trail version look like, because I think that to Frosty's point, I too have ridden that corridor. And while you can ride it, it is unsafe to a large extent. And so I would really like to see the analysis continue to grow so that we can understand whether there really is legitimately the increased use on the trail and then what that potential increased use would be as any one of the trail alignments would come forward. Additionally, with that, I would love to see the continued economic analysis that says, or overall any analysis, because the intention of the 16 trails was not just about recreational tourism. It really is about the health, welfare, and well-being of existing citizens within Colorado, and that's the whole point of access to parks, open space, and trails. So I'd really like to see, as the cost-benefit comes back from the analysis, as Frosty mentioned, of the cost of each of the alignments, and potentially a no-trail alignment, what are all of the impacts, including the impacts to, you know, our citizens? How much more access is gained to how many more citizens? So that we can really look at everything, right? The impacts to wildlife, but we are occupants as well of this space and this valley, and will that increase in access to that kind of recreation have benefits that we're maybe not being as conscious of in some of the existing studies? So I'd really like to see those two things come forward as the planning process moves forward.
it's interesting being right here because I was born in 1977. And I was raised in the Crystal River Valley. And in fact, my family, we rented out our property right near Philoha Meadows to cattle and horses and frolicked around those meadows because that was what was next to our property. And I would come into town every day for school, either on the bus or, you know, in my parents' car, looking at the railroad grade. And honestly, I am not kidding. I wanted to walk it or bike it my entire life. Mm-hmm. I have been looking at that since I was two. So probably not when I was two. But there is a part of me that really wants to be able to take my kids and myself on a trail up the Crystal River Valley. I have lived in places outside of here. I've lived in Montana, around the world, and the Crystal River Valley is honestly one of the most beautiful and special places to me personally. And so while I am coming out and I want to support the trail, and I do think there's a reason for a trail up there, I think it's important for those of us who want to be active and bike. I think it's great for communities that have bike trails. I do think that we can do this right. And I think, one thing I want to say is I'm really appreciative of Pitkin County Open Space and Trails acquiring the different land and acquiring Philoha Meadows. That could easily been a housing development at some point. And so when we look out at the meadow, what if there were 30 homes sitting on that meadow and instead we might have a trail on it or we might not? But I would still love the opportunity to at least bike up there, and if I have to bike on that stretch of the highway, it's also a beautiful section of highway. So I'm really supportive of a trail. I have lots of friends who live in Carbondale who are constituents who have let me know that they're supportive of a trail, and that doesn't discount that we are, I don't think wildlife are important. I'm a diehard environmentalist, we'll just say. So much so, you know, I bike, we'll guess, 330 days of the year. I think climate change has the biggest impact on our wildlife. There are bears in our community eating our garbage because there's no acorns for them to eat. So we can talk about wildlife and the impact this trail might have, and I understand the cumulative impacts, but there's so much more to discuss. Like, what else can we do for the bighorn sheep population besides just not build a trail? There's got to be other management practices or something else that we can do to protect them as well. And so we should all be advocating for those if we're also advocating to not have a trail because we're concerned about the wildlife. Some of the additional questions I'd love to find out are, again, those larger impacts on wildlife. And I think echoing what Heather said about the economic impact and the health and wellness impact on our communities, I do think it's more important. I've got two kids, and we get them out biking and hiking as much as we can, and we're going to continually need to do that with our kids, and we live in a fantastic area to do that, but we are battling these things right here. And so I think having more creative places to get our kids out would be fabulous.
I'll be brief. I'd first just like to say thanks to Pitkin County Board of Trustees and Open Space and Trails Board for even considering such a significant investment in this part of your county that's a long way from the majority of your population in Carbondale. You know, we're a small town of limited means, and we can't do big projects like this on our own, so we really depend on partners like Aspen Valley Land Trust and like Pitkin County to really help us access and protect and preserve public lands and make more lands public around us. So I really appreciate this effort. I'd really like to see this trail go forward. I think we can do it right, as Frosty said. I really do, and I think I've spent a lot of time over the past few months with my 10-year-old hiking all these sections that are public that I can on the off-highway alignment so I can really understand when you're making your comments about those sections and things like that. And understand kind of what makes sense. I think as a safety improvement for cyclists on Highway 133, I think it's pretty critical that we have something other than just the highway to bike on. As well as I think Carbondale struggles to define exactly sort of economically where we want to go as a town And I think that this fits so well with Carbondale's sort of ethos and potential as a draw for people who would be the kind of visitors that wouldn't have a big impact on our town and doing low-impact kinds of recreation up the Crystal Valley, as well as accessibility and connectivity for people who live in the valley. I think I'll leave it at that, and I just want to make sure that we find a way to go forward with this and not have big adverse impacts. My questions would just be about private land ownership issues. I'm not clear on those. I've read all the reports and gone through every section on the website and all that, and it's just not jumping out to me exactly where those segments are, where it's not publicly held, and how that could be acquired for some of the off-highway sections. And then along with that, the feasibility of the on-highway alignment, financially and from an engineering perspective, it seems the cost differential, as I think Marty said, is huge between the on-highway being much more expensive than the off-highway. And I just hope everybody keeps in mind as we talk about this, I think most of our focus is on here to Redstone, and that's the paved multi-use proposal. But beyond Redstone, the proposal is for a single-track trail to the top of McClure Pass. So far, I haven't heard as much discussion about that, so I'm interested to hear if that's a concern. Thanks.
Thanks, Ben. I think for the sake of time, I'm going to reserve my comments to the ones that come from the town of Carbondale proper, not so much from the Board of Trustees. And just really for the record, I wanted to state these. As was mentioned before, we get our water, some of our water from Nettle Creek, so our access and quality of water up Nettle Creek is of utmost importance to us. So protecting that utility easement, as well as the infrastructure underground, is really important to us. Protecting that easement also means maintaining good relationships with the landowners around that area, so that's of paramount concern to us, and we don't want to take that lightly. And then secondly, right now the town of Carbondale has a responsibility to take care of the Crystal River Trail from Carbondale to the county line, I believe. And we're concerned about the maintenance obligations. You know, we're a little old town. We don't have big budgets. So if the trail does go through, or when the trail goes through, we're concerned about the increased maintenance requirements, and we'd have to have discussions with Pickens County about how to make that happen, because we just can't afford it. Nor do we have the infrastructure to really support a trail of increased use with parking lots that exist on other trails. So we just really don't want to bring up those issues, and those are concerns to ours, and I'll reserve my comments until next week.
Great, thank you all for your comments. So I'm going to open this up to the public now, and as I said, there's about 45 people who have signed up. As typical, we're going to limit the comments to 3 minutes or less, because if you multiply 45 times 3, we're going to lose the Carbondale trustees way before that. So what I'll ask you to do is come up to the mic, identify yourself. If you're with an organization, please state who and where you live. And if you get lengthy, I will cut you off. I hope that you respect each other and respect the time that you're taking, so everyone has a chance to provide some input. As Gary said, if you want to have your comments as a public record, please email them in or post them on our Open Space and Trails website. And I think with that, I'm just going to shuffle these up, and I'll just sort of start going through the list. But again, let's be respectful of each other and respectful of the time. There's no extra brownie points for cheering or booing. It just disrupts the process, so please don't do that. And let's just try to learn and have this opportunity to have some public engagement. So with that, I'll start Sarah Johnson. And then we'll have Bill Hanks on deck.
Somebody has to go first.
Sorry about that.
All right. So
So my name is Sarah Johnson, and I'm speaking today on behalf of myself as a citizen of the Crystal Valley watershed. Although my business, Wild Bros Education, currently has a contract project with Pitkin County, my comments today are from me and just me. I was going to tell you a whole bunch about Philoha Meadows because that's what I know. I've spent 7 years in my past being a primary interpreter and educator of that place. But listening to the comments tonight already, I think I'm going to throw most of what I wrote out the door. And I really appreciated Heather's comment, made me think a lot about equity, inclusion, and diversity. And I was at that meeting when the governor created Colorado the Beautiful, and I was like, oh my gosh, it should say Colorado the Full. We don't have enough water. You got to bring your own bed. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And I think your point, Heather, I want to bring this to light, is that that 10-minute walk from a trail to a park and open space was intended to create an opportunity for every person, those privileged and not so privileged, to have access to the natural world for health and exercise and mental health, and the list goes on and on. And by building a trail that goes from into the middle of nowhere with a whole bunch of tax dollars, I don't know if that does that. And I would challenge all of us to think about that and think about the people who are so privileged to be here tonight to be able to make a public comment and all those others who are not, and to think about them because of whatever their situation is, will probably never use this trail. And so maybe that money could be spent in Pitkin County in a different, or in this Roaring Fork Valley in a different way. So I just put that out there as a big question to ponder and to consider. As I said, I spent a whole lot of time at Philoha Meadows, and it's a wonderful place. The county has declared it its most important, its most ecologically rich open space within the county. And so for a trail alignment to go through there is probably inappropriate. Also, it's so important that there's also an additional conservation easement on top of that property that's held by the Roaring Fork Conservancy. So it must be even more important. So just to really think about alignment, and I think putting a trail next to the highway makes sense if we're going to go that route, but not through there. We also know that all the recent research coming from CSU and others, last winter we had a couple visiting researchers from CSU explain even more about how recreation continues to impact wildlife, whether that's walking or riding a bicycle, in addition to all the motorized things. So I think we just need to be really cognizant of what we know and are learning left and right. And I'm not a resident of Pitkin County, but I'm a resident of this valley. And I think that I'm proud of the work that Pitkin County Open Space and Trails has done for years. And I've helped other people be inspired to understand how valuable that is for years with my previous work.
Sarah, you'll need to wrap up, please.
So just as Disney, this is an interesting factoid, Disney paid to move the power lines out of the Philoha viewshed from the rail corridor to the highway during their filming of Tall Tale with Patrick Swayze in the early 1990s. If we pay to build a busy trail, I'm curious who will have to pay to move it when we realize that the bighorn sheep and the elk have been displaced of their most coveted critical winter and spring home in the cold north-south Crystal Valley.
Thank you. Okay, Bill Hanks, and then after that will be Darren Broom, and then Andy Weisner.
Good evening. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity also to say a few words. I'll keep it real short. Okay, thank you. I'm a resident of the Crystal River Valley for 46 years, taught in the schools in Carbondale, worked for the town of Carbondale one time, actually. One of the things we hear a lot of living in the Crystal River Valley is NIMBYism. That's one of the common things we hear when we bring up our attempts to defend, protect the environment and the place we live. And I would just say that anyone who lives in the Crystal River Valley, I guess we're all Mendes. It's our backyard and it's our front yard. And we've lived there for these many years for very good reasons. We feel overlooked, I think, in the valley. Those of us who are pay the dedicated mill levy tax, property tax. I think that this is an opportunity for me to speak as a property owner, as a resident, and I want to thank you for that opportunity. I wonder if I could set the record straight on maybe on one thing that I hear quite a bit at these presentations, and that I've been dealing with this since 2000, the impending trail coming up the Crystal River. I did research on Flow of Meadows back when it was there was a Greenwald application for homes in Flow of Meadows. This was in 1992. Mary Lackner and the Planning Commission at that time said that there would be no homes built in Flow of Meadows, that any construction would be on the west side of the river. They went on record in the early 90s, Pickens County went on record of also objecting to purchasing any part of the rail grade there at Penny Hot Springs, that it was just too sensitive. It was just not a place that they were gonna get involved in. So I know that Open Space and Trails likes to claim that they're the ones who have kept homes and developments out there. Well, it goes back before them. I think now what we have is a little bit of out of balance with trails and recreation, and I believe it's time to set the balance straight. There's a well-documented historical record of the purchase of parcels on the east side for the sole purpose of running the trail through them. So if you're going to buy open space and then exploit it and become the developer, I think that's a thing we have to really think hard about. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Daryl Broom, then Andy Weisner, and then Tom Cardaman.
Hi, my name's Darren Broom. I'm one half of the ownership of Aloha Mountain Cyclery in Carbondale, local resident. My business partner, Nick DeGross, is over here. I'm speaking as myself. Obviously, as a business owner, you can come here and get a lot of ire. But I just want to make a statement. We came here I came here to learn. Part of our business plan of opening our shop was very community-driven. We did not get into it to just make money. If we did, we chose the wrong business. Ours is recreation-oriented. We did so because of health, welfare. One of my key things has always been health. I was a nutrition major early in college before I changed that. But one of my concerns with anything is wildlife, how it impacts our environment. So that seeing more and more studies done is going to help us continue to form our opinion. As a business person, one of the things we also consider is how is it going to impact our local economy, of which we are a part. Something of this nature could have a positive aspect for us. I also think that as child obesity rates go up around the country, where if you look around, there's a lot of healthy kids in Colorado. That's because we love the outdoors. As we age, one of the things I've noticed as aging consumers and customers come into our shop is they're looking for places that are flatter to ride, places that that give them the ability to recreate that are a little easier, not just going up a 30-degree grade right off the bat. So ease of access to certain areas that provide that is also something that's in limited quantity. The Rio Grande path has a 2% grade. It's pretty mellow, but that's one of the only things we have. We are very respectful into everyone who lives in our area, so we do not want to disrespect, and I do not want to disrespect anything with any of my comments, but we look forward to learning more in this process because we know it's a long process. But ours is from a standpoint of health, well-being, and also, if you can get somebody out of a car and on a bike, we're all about it. So, those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Andy Weisner, and then Tom Cardaman, and then Carol and Carolyn and Philip Gaylor together.
Hi, my name is Andy Weisner. I live at 6650 East Cypress Creek Road. I'm a board member of the Wilderness Workshop, but my views tonight are my own personal views. I think all of us probably think that the idea of getting on a bike in Carbondale and going up to Redstone for lunch and biking back is a very seductive idea. However, there is no plan yet, and the devil is always in the details, i.e. the route that will be chosen. So as you consider developing this proposal, I would keep the following in mind. First and foremost, pay absolute attention to the views of former and current Division of Wildlife personnel at the local level, not the state level, the local level, because these are the people who know the land on the ground. Second, in my opinion, no trail should go in any area where the DOW has high concerns about wildlife disruption. Third, much of the east side of the Crystal River Valley is very close, within a mile to a half a mile of the Maroon Bell Snowmass Wilderness Area, and there's very sensitive wildlife habitat in there. That needs to be looked at very carefully. Fourth, in addition to the above concerns, I have concerns about bandit trails, which tend to sprout off of legal trails, and we've had a huge problem with them in both counties. I'm also concerned about the growing popularity of fat tire snow bikes going into wildlife habitat in the winter seasons. I think you're going to see a lot more of that. Third, I'm not a big fan of seeing pavement, frankly, on both sides of the Crystal River, except where absolutely necessary. This is a river that hopefully someday will be designated wild and scenic, and pavement just doesn't cut it with wild and scenic rivers. We have plenty of recreational trails in Pitkin and Garfield counties, maybe one of the best systems in the world. So we don't need any new trails where there'll be conflicts with wildlife. I note that the Division of Wildlife, from what I've seen, has very serious concerns about the ability of seasonal closures to effectively protect wildlife. And too often it seems that we're human beings, and there's wildlife out there, and wildlife always seems to get the short end of a stick. So the bottom line is, if it's too expensive to build a new trail up the Crystal River that doesn't encroach on wildlife habitat, then I say, don't build a trail. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Cardamon, followed by Carolyn and or Philip Gaylord, and then Jennifer Craig.
Hello, I'm Tom Cardamon, a founder with a small group of citizens of the Open Space and Trails program back starting in 1989. And I just have a few comments that I'll excerpt from what I'll be submitting. I recall in the 1990s, the forays up the Crystal River that we took as a group, the Open Space Board, hadn't been formed by then. An early acquisition was Redstone's Elk Park on the highway, once a heavy equipment yard. There was also the Perm Creek Trailhead, Red Wine Point, and Faloha Meadows for backcountry access, bighorn sheep habitat, and bighorn and elk and other habitat values, respectively, those three. We also looked at the old railroad grade, and I recall commissioning a study with our board. I didn't do this all by myself. It was a study of the old railroad right-of-way as a potential trail. We learned that the right-of-way had reverted to multiple private ownerships and concluded that reacquiring the right-of-way was highly unlikely, and any thought of takings was contrary to our values. We also understood that the DOW, that the trail on the right-of-way would conflict with wildlife. We abandoned thoughts of acquiring the right-of-way because of the information we had gathered by then. Much more recently, in 2016, my wife Jody and I were very much involved with the Friends of Open Space and Trails supporting reauthorization of the program. It's a great program, of course. We all believe in it. We benefit from it. And I want to be clear that I remain very supportive of the program. Jody and I were very encouraged that the outcome of our meetings and written communication was the establishment of protection of natural biodiversity, in quotes, as an absolute goal of the program. Recreation, in turn, was established as a qualified goal. The biodiversity policy further states that Open Space and Trails Program seeks to rely on the best available science for property-specific study of natural habitat conditions within the Roaring Fork watershed as the starting point for optimal allocation and use of funds. Following that line, I spoke last week with Dave Anderson, director of the Colorado Natural Heritage Program, the organization that authored the Roaring Fork Watershed Biological Inventory almost 20 years ago now. I gathered from that conversation that the inventory is now in need of updating and that there were significant gaps of information as well that needed to be filled. CNHP, the Natural Heritage Program, has done such inventories for 36 Colorado counties, is scientifically rigorous, and well-equipped to maintain objectivity when there are thorny issues involved. That's a quote from Dave. He's used to dealing with thorny issues, and paying attention to the paper, it seems like this might be one of them.
Tom, you'll need to wrap up, Tom.
I'm in the process of gathering an interest group of individuals to work with OST to support OST's program biodiversity policy by updating and broadening the 1999 inventory. This will produce a tool to guide the OST proposals and projects with the best available science. I would also propose that we follow and improve on the model of stakeholder participation that was established for the hunter-smuggler cooperative planning process. That inclusive approach went a long way towards avoiding the tensions of the standard process of proposal, public hearing.
Tom, I'm going to have to cut you off, Tom.
Okay.
You're done,
Tom. Thank you. There's other people that would like to talk, Tom. Thank you.
I can't really hear you,
but I'd say thank you. It's either Carolyn or Philip Gaylord, followed by Jennifer Craig, and then Holly McLean. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the phone's been out at the midnight hour.
Good evening, and I want to thank all of you for the opportunity to speak before you tonight. My name is Philip Gaylord. If any of you saw me walk up, you'll know that I can't ride a bicycle, and I can only walk 25 or 30 feet, so I'll never use a trail. But I'm in favor of a trail. And my tax dollars can go to pay for a trail. I have no objection to that. What I want to speak to is the issue of mitigation of the sensitive areas on the east side of the Crystal River. There is no such thing as mitigation of the human footprint in an area unless you physically stand people present at those areas at all times in order to protect them. Signage is not going to work. Impediments are not going to work. None of those things are going to work when you're dealing with very sensitive areas east of the Crystal River. I have on many occasions driven by Penny Hot Springs and literally seen people cross the river and go into Floja Meadows. The problem is there's no cell phone service up there, so you can't call anyone. I've spoken to Sheriff DeSalvo at great length. Routine calls for service to Redstone are anywhere from an hour to 4 hours. Emergency response to Redstone is 45 minutes. Fire rescue response to Redstone is 45 minutes or more. I know because I've been carried out of my home by the sheriff's deputies and fire rescue on at least 10 occasions. I make these statements with a great deal of expertise. I'm a 30-year veteran, retired of the Miami-Dade Police Department. I know what it means to obey a law and to disobey a law, and I know what it requires for a law to be enforced. And tragically, the absence of humans to to do proactive enforcement to protect these very sensitive areas, it cannot happen. And for anybody to make a claim that it can be, they're significantly misrepresenting the truth. And I don't want to see that happen under any circumstance. Now, I want everybody in this room to know that I live up north of the North Bridge of Redstone. The proposed trail on the east side of the Crystal River is within 50 feet of my front door. I've had several unlawful incursions to my residence, two attempts to get into my residence. I was in the house at the time. I wasn't able to get to my gun quick enough, and they fled. And Pitkin County has posted a sign at the top of my driveway that says private property, no entry. It's been there for 6 years, 7 years. So that's all I have to say. I wish the very best that a trail can be somehow formulated and the people that are able to enjoy a recreational trail have the opportunity to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jennifer Craig, followed by Holly McLean, and then Greg Noss.
Thank you for the opportunity to have this meeting here tonight. My name is Jennifer Craig, and I've lived in the Valley for all of my life. And I would say that I'm speaking on behalf of the wildlife. I think when we, as human beings, see an opportunity for a good time in this valley, for a great bike ride, a great hike, easy access, everything else goes out the window, and we go, yeah, that's logical, that sounds great, let's do it. I would say it's somewhat like what's going on in our current administration nationally about climate change. We have a blind spot. And I think we have a blind spot right now thinking that recreation doesn't impact wildlife, because if you've seen the changes in this valley over the years, there's been a huge impact to wildlife throughout the valley, up all the way up to the top of Independence Pass and all the way down through the end of Garfield County, the whole state. So my concerns are that this trail is going to negatively impact wildlife all the way over to Crested Butte, not just in this valley, but keeping it in this valley. There is no way that this trail can be compatible with wildlife values. So I hope every one of you thinks about that when you're making your decisions regarding this trail. Thank you.
Thank you. Holly McLean, and then Greg Noss, and then John Emmerich.
Hello, my name is Holly McLean. I've been in the Valley for over 47 years, and I've seen changes. And I am speaking for the wildlife also. I noticed that when Gary Tenenbaum did his opening statement, he mentioned passion for the trail, passion for connectivity, for recreation. There was no passion for wildlife. I speak for the wildlife tonight. Kevin Wright, his letter, I believe, if it's the same letter at the end, he said, when is enough enough? And that's what I'm saying. We ride the Crown on horseback throughout the summer and other trails as well. And I have to say that many of the mountain bike people we meet are respectful and good. They step off the trail, we speak to them, we step off the trail oftentimes for them. We ask them to speak so the horses aren't afraid. And we get along very well. However, it's very discouraging that in the winter the fat tire bikes kind of rip around up in the trail on the Crown in the winter. There are a lot of, renegade trails that go off the regular trails. They kind of go where they want. Oftentimes they'll put their bikes over the fences in closed areas as well. There are photos taken in Snowmass Village, proof that they're doing it. These are bad ones. There are good ones, too. So I'm not against mountain biking, but I do want to protect the wildlife. It's really important, especially in this very precious corridor. So I'm here to speak for the wildlife tonight. That's it.
Thank you. Greg Noss, then John Emmerich, then Paula Serre.
that's okay?
Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for letting us speak tonight. I am concerned about the wildlife. I know what we destroyed in the Roaring Fork Valley, which I don't want to happen in the Crystal Valley. We can work this trail close to the road. We can do it on Saturdays when most people are riding the trail between Redstone and Carbondale, simply by putting some signs up that say 45 mile an hour zone, 35 mile an hour zone. Try your Saturdays next year, see what happens, see if you can limit the amount of people, but keep the trail close to the highway. Don't go over there. Don't even think about it. We've already destroyed the wildlife in the Roaring Fork Valley. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. John Emmerich, then Paula Sear, and then Marge Perry.
Good evening. My name is John Emmerich. I live in the Crystal Valley. I am an ecologist. I am a stream biologist. And about 10-15 years ago, from about 2003 to 2005, I and my partner and colleague Dee Malone started what was then known as the Stream Health Initiative. And that initiative was to conduct watershed-wide stream and riparian habitat assessment. We covered in 3 years over 300 stream miles. We covered the main stem of the Roaring Fork, as well as the major tributaries of the Roaring Fork, including the Crystal River. And I'd just like to say a few things about what we took away from our study in the Crystal River. First of all, our poor Crystal River is beat to heck. It's a very degraded stream. Highway without impacting to a large degree the already degraded riparian habitat. I would especially think this would be a...
You'll need to wrap up, John.
I'm especially for those areas which on the opposite side, on the east side of the river, have already been identified as critical wildlife habitat. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Paula Sear, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, then Marge Perry, then Lisa Tasker.
I live up in Marble, and I've lived there since about 93. I live in Marble, I've been there since about 93, and I think the Crystal Valley is fine just the way it is. I don't think it needs a bike path. I think it could be a tourist attraction just simply because it doesn't have a bike path, because it's something that hasn't been affected like Rio Grande coming down from Aspen. The bike path that's off of Catherine Store Road continues down to Glenwood Springs. I mean, the Crystal Valley is just absolutely special, and I think we need to keep it that way. So I don't think there needs to be any bike path at all up there. I think what would be more important is to take the bike paths that already exist to make the access to those bike paths safer and better for parking lots. What I see the potential of happening is people coming up, they're not going to ride the entire way from Carbondale up. They're going to be pulling over and parking someplace. And I personally have experienced a lot of people pulling out. There's more people now at Penny Hot Springs than I've ever seen before. And they pull out. They're just spaced out. They're hot. I don't know what's going on, but they come out and people aren't paying attention. I'm afraid it's going to make 133 a little more dangerous spot, area to drive. So, of course, I'm concerned about the wildlife, but I just think, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to think about. There's no cell service. I think people bringing families up, they're not going to be able to ride the entire way. I think there's a lot of stuff that hasn't been thought about that people who, I work at the Whitty Creek Tavern, and people who come from Aspen down to the tavern, there's gobs of them, and they arrive and they are bloodied up from crashing, and they need cell phone service, they need first aid, and those people who live in Carbondale who are extreme athletes and are great bikers, there are places you can ride along 133. I have ridden along 133. I know it's scary, but I don't think it's worth what is being proposed to be done along 133. You can go to Crested Butte, you can ride over Schofield Pass, you can go over McClure Pass. There's great hikes. There's all kinds of outdoor activities that are available. I don't think we need another bike path at all. Keep the Crystal Valley wild and just like it is. I'd hate to see any bikers going through Aloha Meadows wiping out the Ute spirits that are out there. I just think that it's fine the way it is, and I think it would be a tragedy to put any kind of a bike path up there. So anyway.
Thank you. Marge Perry, then Lisa Tasker, then Doris Downey.
I'm Marge Perry. I live along the bike path right where it comes into Pitkin County. I was born there, and things have changed a lot. And I was very supportive of the first segment of the trail from Carbondale to the BRB. It's partly, mostly, entirely for community purposes. It's incredible what you see on that trail. It is not any hotshot bikers ordinarily. It's just families getting out, moms with little kids. A guy goes out in his wheelchair, electric wheelchair, and goes up and down. And I really support that. But I think to continue on up the valley is really inappropriate. There are, as everyone has mentioned, wildlife concerns. There should be no trail on the east side of the river. Our wildlife numbers are down as far as mule deer and elk. There's too much risk to bandit trails, just use taking off on the east side. And I think you could possibly do you could consider no trail. I think you need to step back and maybe just consider a whole new beginning from A and B to C with no trail, D with a modified trail where appropriate. I think we need to talk about a lot more possibilities than just A and B. And maybe, you know, bring in all the players and have a collaborative approach and work through it and take time to reach that decision. Mostly. Also, I don't think seasonal closures work, especially on the Crystal, where there's so many points of access. I cannot imagine them being honored. And I think everyone said everything else I was going to say.
Thank you. Lisa Tasker, then Doris Downey, then Butch Peterson.
Good evening. My name is Lisa Tasker, and I'm a longtime resident of the Roaring Fork watershed with a humble and deep connection to all our natural areas here. Much of that appreciation is informed by science. I have a lot of science in my background. Before I say anything else, I do want to thank all of you, the BOCC and the Carbondale Council, and the Open Space and Trails Board, Gary Tenenbaum, everybody who's here, for your dedicated public service. You're the very people who make representative democracies work. And additionally, thank you for the public comment period today. I'd first like to ask the audience to indulge me and to raise your hands if you are here because you have concerns about the proposed Crystal River Trail or concerns about the process as it stands. Great, thanks. Then can you raise your hand if you are here to fully support the process as it stands and therefore the Crystal River Trail period, if you're really settled on that, if you're comfortable raising your hand. There you go. Well, that's great. Well, so I just think it's informative to sort of know who's here in the room and who showed up. Unfortunately, I think I perceive a troubling trend regarding the trail of adopting some of our current federal government's tactics of name-calling, labeling, killing the messenger, and the use of where you live as tactics for dismissing a different viewpoint. If you live in the Crystal River Valley, you may be dismissed as a NIMBY. If you don't live in the Crystal River Valley, you may be dismissed just for that. I've even heard talk for the first time, to my knowledge, about attempting to place rules on Pekin County caucus meetings. Does that have anything to do with what's happening with the Crystal River caucus? I don't know. I'm just wondering. It seems the appearance of neighbor-to-neighbor angst and the divisions in the Crystal Valley neighborhoods on the caucus, within the Crystal Valley Environmental Protection Agency, wilderness workshops concerns, et cetera, should be a huge red flag. This top-down, government-imposed idea of this trail needs to step back, way back, and I know I'm repeating some people. It was not a grassroots group of people up the Crystal River that got together to make this happen. Not at all. The top-down aspect of this proposed trail, coupled with the angst that has been unleashed between residents, seems like it should drive some deep internal questioning by Pekin County Open Space and Trails. The residents and native creatures of the Crystal Valley will feel the changes that come with this trail, and no one else will, and the changes could be monumental. None of us can predict the future, but think North Star Nature Preserve and Conundrum Hot Springs as local examples of landscape changes you could never have dreamt would have happened even 10 years ago. And if you want to use the, quote, think regionally or even globally, unquote, argument, well, what are we doing even thinking of degrading even one last sliver of what's left of our area's native systems? Do you know that we have lost half of the world's wildlife?
Lisa, you'll need to wrap up, please.
Okay, well, I'm almost done. This is my last part. We have lost half of the world's wildlife in the last 40 years across the globe. Just Google that. It's death by a thousand cuts. It's an incremental degradation of the native systems we have left in this iconic watershed. We have a lot to lose here still. I dare all of us to try our damnedest to think differently and apply it to this proposed landscape development project, the Crystal Valley Trail. And as they say in Carbondale, and let's apply to this project, let's apply this thinking to this project and beyond.
Thank you. Doris Downey, then Butch Peterson, then Rita Strong.
Redstone. I've lived in Redstone about 20 years, and before that I grew up over in Paonia. And I think it's complicated. I think it's really complicated, because I think the idea of a trail where we can take our kids, where we can take our moms or our dads or families, I think something that's off the highway is really what those of us who want to go out and hike on a trail want. Development in the valley has, I would assert, has been more detrimental to wildlife in terms of habitat loss than a trail would be. And I think that traffic on 133 has increased dramatically. And I know some people, like my husband, who do bicycle on 133, but I don't bicycle on 133 anymore. It does not feel safe, and I definitely would not let my children do it. I think that one can be protective of wildlife and be very supportive of wildlife and still desire to have a trail that is off the highway. I think it's complicated to figure out how to do that. A number of years ago, a group of us got together to talk about the trail up the Crystal, I think in the early 2000s. And one of the things that we looked at was research from Jackson, Wyoming, where they have an extensive trail system. And they also did research on the presence of wildlife before the trail was built and after the trail was built. I think it would behoove us to look at that research again. I'm remembering that the research showed that the impacts to wildlife were almost insignificant with the trail. But that's just my memory, and I think we could look at the actual research that they did before trail, post-trail. I think that recreational opportunities in the summer are really desirable for our population in the Crystal Valley and for visitors who come. I would like to see the actual evidence on seasonal closures. Every time people talk about seasonal closures, they say, well, everybody knows they don't work. Well, I don't know whether they work or don't work. I'd like to see the evidence there, rather than just people throwing out information. So I would like the research team to actually provide us some information about seasonal closures. Thank you so much for being here tonight. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Butch Peterson, then Rita Strong, then George Tranto.
Hi,
I want to say thank you all for coming out here tonight and listening to all of us and have the opportunity to speak to you in this forum. My name is Butch Peterson. I'm an avid cyclist. I've been living in the valley for about 30 years. And I think that this trail would be a fantastic asset to the community. Just the state and just the valley, everybody around here could really enjoy riding their bikes to all the way to Crested Butte. I have a family, and we'd like to ride together, and we would ride the trail. And I think the whole community would become a better community with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Regis Strong, George Trantrell, and then Stacy Burnett.
Hi, my name is Rita Strong. I reside in Pitkin County since 1968. I really appreciate so many of our elected officials and volunteers on boards to have come tonight and given us this opportunity to speak. It's really valuable.
Three of the greatest problems that affect wildlife. The other is your energy development, which we all know in this area.
Rita, you need to wrap up, please.
And the other is beetles and wildfire. We can do something about the recreation impact on wildlife. The Pitkin County Open Space and Trails acquired the areas in the Crystal River Valley that are going to be under attack by the development of this trail because they were special to wildlife. It would be really, as others have said before, there's no way to mitigate this impact. You just have to stay out of these areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you. George Trantrell, then Stacy Burnett, and then Philip Youngman.
To everyone for taking a lot of heat tonight. I know it's tough to be in that position, but I think we got to talk about some compromise too. Many of these things, not everyone gets exactly what they want, but in this situation, I think we're looking for some compromise. And I know there's been a lot of critique on it, but I would applaud you to move forward on the trail. I'd love to see it before my son is my age, because many times just the planning on these things stalls them out. I mean, I saw the planning on the Crown. It was meetings 10 years ago, before it happened. And now those trails are there, but I would love to see this happen before that, not another 10-year wait. So I support the trail. I support compromise on getting it done in a timely manner and compromise on potential where the route goes to protect wildlife, but also to make it doable. To put it all along the highway from a cost perspective isn't doable. So let's be pragmatic also. I'd love to see it go up to Redstone. I'd love to see the trail go to McClure Pass as a soft trail. So thanks for your time, and again, I applaud you for being here and taking a lot of heat.
Thank you. Stacy Burnett, then Philip Youngman, and then Jerome Dayton.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the time tonight. I want to speak and echo a lot of what other people have said, but also speak to a matter of perspective. For those that don't know me, I'm a fifth-generation Carbondale native. I have deep ties to the Crystal River Valley. Now I live up there. I've paid Pitkin County property tax since the late 80s, which I've always had a dual conflict because I have mineral rights and property rights in Pitkin County. So it's always been this idea of what kind of vision do we want to see. I'm glad I'm not on that side of the table anymore. It's kind of fun to have a seat to hold you all accountable. One of the things that's helpful, and for those of you that don't know where I live, I actually live on the west side of the river, the west side of the highway, and my property abuts the CDOT right-of-way. One thing that I think is worth noting is kind of what Kenny had said earlier about historical perspective and legacy. You're all making decisions on how this will impact us in the future. I want us all to be very proud of the legacy that we leave, and that for the future generations of my family or Erica's family or whoever's family can come and visit and recreate and enjoy this wonderful area. I think that you can over-engineer something and make certain data points point to what the end you want to seek. And so when people talk about compromise, I think it's also good to see that we don't have to have the perfect end. We can do things in peace and we can do things thoughtfully. A couple of things about your actual reports that I think are worth noting. For instance, in the Loris report on page 30, continuing to 31, we talk about right of way. That's an interesting paragraph on rights of way about taking into account not the ownership in making this plan happen. I think the average citizen is unaware of the potential looming battles that may lie ahead depending on where this alignment goes. And I think consideration needs to be taken into, are we going to pull the trigger on RS-2477 and what kind of impacts will that have, not just in the Crystal River Valley, but far-reaching. Another point that I think really needs to be analyzed is bandit trails, how we prevent them, how we manage them, and how we decommission them. I would really hate for this beautiful opportunity to turn into the Crown example 20 years from now. I second how the Crown has evolved, and it's no longer multi-use. It's a great recreational opportunity and amenity, but it's no longer multi-use, and there's very little to no wildlife. You might see the random animal, but it's not like it was when I was growing up and when we stayed clear, especially in the winter. Your process, I think you need to reevaluate that as well. I appreciate Dan, the mayor of Carbono, for pushing for a public dialogue tonight, because sometimes when you answer a survey or you're kind of geared and guided to a certain eventuality, you don't always get to speak your mind. So I really encourage the Pickens County Commissioners and Open Space and Trails Board to continue having open dialogues such as this. I think it's helpful for you to answer to your constituents and see what kind of issues they bring up. And then finally, I really would like to see less degrading and undermining of folks that have a contrary opinion. Just because you're a NIMBY doesn't mean you aren't fun. I'm a good example of this will impact me and my property values and whatever directly, and I'm all for that thoughtful dialogue and a thoughtful plan. So please keep at it and do this mindfully so we can all be proud of this legacy.
Thank you. Philip Youngman, then Jerome Dayton, then Kate Hudson.
Philip Youngman, and I live near Redstone. This is a question addressed primarily to OS&T and their consultants. What I don't understand is why you are focused almost exclusively on two rather poor alternatives, in my view. The alignments you refer to as A and B, and you're completely ignoring the possibility of creating a trail which is for most of its course clean paved shoulders on both sides of 133. As an avid bicyclist myself, I consider that to be a far better alternative. It's safer, and it's got to be much cheaper than the alternatives you're considering. You're in the process of contemplating investing several tens of millions of dollars on alternative A and B when you're ignoring what, in my view, would be a much better alternative that serves the interests of bicyclists in the valley far better. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerome Dayton, Kate Hudson, and then Matt Lauffer.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. I'm one of the seniors that Darren refers to. I really love the Rio Grande Trail. And as my wife and I get older, we do not like dealing with traffic. So we're really looking forward to some kind of trail up to Redstone where we don't have to deal with traffic. And I'm now going to reserve judgment as to trails A and B, because there's a lot of useful information tonight, and I'd like to have you continue pushing that out for us to evaluate. Thank you.
Thank you. Kate Hudson, Matt Lauffer, and then Todd Fugate.
Good evening. My name is Kate Hudson. I'm a resident of the Crystal River Valley and a citizen of Pickens County. I want to be clear that I am speaking as a private citizen and not as a member of the Healthy Rivers and Streams Board. I'm also speaking from the perspective of the professional work that I do, which is focused on water and protecting rivers and waterways across the West. I am concerned that the evaluation that has happened to date of the trail that is proposed and the various options that are on the table has not focused on nor evaluated a very important set of potential impacts. That is impacts on the Crystal River, the heart and soul of our valley. I would urge the Pitkin County Commissioners at the Open Space Board and their staff to fully evaluate the potential for significant in-stream and riparian impacts, both construction impacts and permanent post-construction impacts that could result from the building of a trail, either alternative A or alternative B. And I would urge you to also give serious consideration to the no action alternative, which is the no trail alternative, which I feel has been taken off the table at this point. All potentially significant impacts must be considered before you make a decision. And I would urge you not to try and somehow make a trade-off between environmental impacts. Pick habitat impacts over water impacts. All of these impacts should be considered, and all potentially significant impacts should be avoided or mitigated to the maximum extent possible, not just one class of impacts. The county has committed itself to protecting its waterways throughout the county. Please keep that commitment to the Crystal River, and do not undertake a trail project that will result in further degradation or constriction of the stream channel or significant loss of wetland and riparian habitat. Thank you for the opportunity to talk, speak tonight.
Thank you. Matt Lawfer, then Todd Fugit, and then Bill Fales.
Thank you for taking the time to your comments on this project. It's something that's clearly important to everyone in the room. I'm speaking in support of this trail and the wildlife. As mentioned by Frosty at the start of the meeting, this needs to be done right, and if done right, all parties interested can be protected through this process, including the flora and fauna we care so much about. I'd like to voice my support for this effort. I've seen firsthand the value, health, and wellness these efforts contribute to my local community. Moreover, I strongly support the single-track segment from Redstone to McClure Pass because of the lower cost, ease of implementation, and a reduced impact to wildlife. Regarding the A and B alignments, my preference is for the B alignment along the historic rail and road because of the improved recreation experience, the lower impact on habitat, and the lower construction costs. A few of us have already begun to explore this region from especially the Ragged Trail this summer. I had a chance to ride that, which is kind of an extension beyond. And there's just a lot of momentum behind making this happen throughout the advocacy community. That's it, and I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Todd Fugate, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, then Bill Fales and Bill Spence.
Hello. I'm a 22-year resident of Carbondale. I'm also a business owner here locally. And I appreciate all the comments about wildlife, and I agree with those. But I think there's one thing that we're missing and not looking closely at, and that's the human safety factor. Of course, we want to protect our wildlife, but we also want to protect ourselves. Highway 133 is not a safe place to ride a bicycle. There's blind corners, there's debris on the road, cars are driving fast, and there's a lot of cars on the road. Widening the shoulder, I don't think, is the answer. I think what we need to do is have a trail and have a combination of both A and B. The other thing that I see is some of the points where that path crosses some of the driveways. My business is located along the bike path here in Carbondale that has an exit that goes right across it. And I've seen accidents there with bikes and cars. So as you're looking at those alternatives, if we can tie in that path to push it away from the driveways, I think that's an important factor that we need to consider. I'm in support of the soft surface path going up to McClure Pass. And again, in balance with the wildlife, trying to take advantage of those places where we can use alternative B for that user experience, to try to feel like you're not up against a roadway, you get to stop, hear the river, and not be next to a vehicle. Thanks.
Thank you. Bill Fales, and then Bill Spence, and then Connie Nuth.
Hi. Thank you. I really appreciate and I really like that you're all here and giving your thoughtful comments. I also really love this entire community, that we can have this conversation on this thorny issue in such a thoughtful and respectful manner, because it is what makes Carbondale such a great place to be. I was on the open space board with most of you. I was on it for 13 years when we purchased most of these properties in the Crystal. I don't remember the rationale for purchasing them being recreation. That's not to say it shouldn't happen, but I don't remember it being what made us decide to recommend their purchase. It was more the wildlife benefits that made us recommend their purchase, or some access into the National Forest Service where there wasn't other available access. The trail goes through our ranch, and we were able to even donate a tiny bit of land to help make the trail a little bit easier to construct. We really like it where it is, and it's amazing seeing the people who use it. It is a great community asset, there's no doubt about it. But we have to really be careful, and I think what we need to do is to really expand the study. Blinders are really useful when you're driving a team of horses. They're really lousy when you're trying to evaluate alternatives for a trail or for any human project. I don't think we should say, oh, I like A, I like B, this is what we should do. We need to expand it to all options, including if the study determines no build is the correct option, including that. But let's have the study and try to determine that. I think there is a gross underestimation of the impact of recreation in some areas. Certainly on the Prince Creek side of the Crown, it has radically changed it, and it's affected our ranching operation a lot. I never used to have 100 elk in my field all fall. I never used to have 40 elk in my field all spring through June. I grow good alfalfa, but I used to grow good alfalfa. My baking hasn't improved that much. A couple of points. I would love it if tonight or in the future that you could pledge not to use eminent domain to acquire trail easements. I think it would do great damage to the land conservation movement throughout the country. And I think you need to really careful that. I hear that, no, shut up. I just think if I had 20 million or $150 million and wanted to spend it to benefit the biodiversity or to benefit it, I would take a really hard look to see if this trail would be what I would spend it on. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Spence, then Connie Nuth, if I'm pronouncing that correct, then Jay Engstrom.
I'm Bill Spence. I've lived in Carbondale going on 15 years. Had my 80th birthday this summer. I love to ride my bicycle up the existing 5.3 miles to the campground. I'd love to see it go further. What is the right configuration, the right alignment? I think the open space and trails gave us a wonderful starting point for this discussion. I think it's pretty clear that having something totally on the B alignment or the A alignment probably won't happen. It'll probably be a combination, if this ever happens, of the two possibilities. The cost factor of along the right-of-way is about 10 times the B alignment. So those that are in favor of having the trail go along the CDOT right-of-way, please consider the great added cost for doing that. Part of that's cantilevering what the trail would be along narrow points of the canyon and so on. So my wife and I used to ride up to Redstone. We wouldn't dare ride on 133 anymore. The trucks, the fast driving cars are just too much to contend with. So I hope that while I'm still able under my own power to ride a bicycle up to Redstone, it'll be on a good trail. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Connie Knuth, Jane Engstrom, Janae Kirk.
My name is Connie Knuth, and I happen to be a Pitkin County resident, but I happen to work in Carbondale. And to the Garfield County people, when the paper came out with the discussion about the bike path for the new elementary school, and Garfield County recognizes it's complex and they have to work with RAPTA, they have to work with the Homeowners Association, and it is a compromise of getting everyone involved. I understand that it's a complex process. And to the Pitkin County commissioners, I would ask that you do a redo on what has been done. I am one of those private residents that you are taking the property. I have a financial background, and I do not agree with the cost factors that they have presented in this study. They are correct. They have taken the engineering factors for inside, and they've taken the engineering factors for the outside, but they have not included what it's going to cost to take over the property. They have not included maintenance costs. I walked the path on 133 5 out of 7 days a week. There is maintenance that is going to be required on that pretty soon. Weeds are coming up and there is maintenance. I also walk along by Red Windy Point where you have the open space. I have put out fires from the illegal campers who camp along there. They say open space property and they come. Pitkin County Open Space says call the ranger. You call Aspen. Well, first of all, I'm 2 miles from my house. My cell phone doesn't work. It takes me a half hour to get to home. I call Pitkin County, and it's 2 hours before a ranger can come. And by that time, the Crystal River Valley is in flames. I lived in the Topanga Malibu fire started 1,000 feet from my house when I lived in California. And I saw my neighbors, the wildlife, and everything, and the devastation of how quickly that happens. We don't have the fire control down in Crystal River to control that. And if it happens in the middle of August when the river is down, you don't have the water to fight it. So I would ask the Pitkin County to take a look at this study again, and let's do a financial analysis and look at all the costs. Everybody says it's cheaper to do internally and it's too expensive to do outside. There are a lot of hidden costs in there that you have not considered. I would love to see us do maintenance on the road that we've already built so we could use it in the winter. You don't have to plow it every day, but if you plowed it 2 or 3 times a month when the big snow was there, we could use that trail 12 months a year. Now, I know that's maintenance that you don't have in the budget, but if you build this trail, there's a lot of maintenance that you haven't considered in what it's going to cost.
Thank you. Jay Engstrom, Janae Kirk, Diane Kenny.
Hi, my name is Jay Engstrom, and I grew up in Redstone. And I remember riding on the side of the highway when I was like 8 years old. It's a totally different story now. It's definitely not as safe as it was then. But one thing that I wanted to talk about was the closures for the wildlife. I do think it's very important that we stay out of those areas, because also with safety, this trail is going to encourage a lot more people to be biking up the Crystal River Valley. And if there's a section that is closed, those bikers are then going to move onto the highway. And so then it doesn't, to me, it just doesn't make sense to have an area, the bike path go through an area that is very sensitive wildlife. Because if we can keep it on the highway, then that way everybody's safer, the animals are happier. And, you know, I do really want to see a bike path up there. I do think that that's a great thing. But at the same time, I do think that the entire community has to be taken into account. And, you know, the majority of the community can't be here, sitting here to talk to us because they're animals. And, yeah, I guess that's where I stand.
Thank you. Janae Kerr, Diane Kinney, Patrick Hunter.
Hello, Janae Kerr from Aspen, and I'm very concerned about recreation, development, fragmentation, all the above that has severely impacted our wildlife, particularly the bighorn sheep. I read a letter from our wildlife officer, Kevin Wright, who recommended not building this trail. And since I've heard earlier tonight that's a possible option, I would definitely recommend not building this trail up highway, the highway, either alternative. But if it had to be built because of compromise, it would certainly be better along either side of Highway 133 and minimally to impact any future wildlife in the area. I used to ride that 133 very frequently in the 90s, and I'm sure the traffic wasn't as bad. But we have hundreds of trails around that mountain bikers and road bikers can ride. And quite frankly, I think most road bikers would, even with an alternative trail, probably take that dangerous road as it is today. You see them going up Independence Pass, which isn't any more, it's more dangerous than 133. And road bikers like to stay on the highway. So if there had to be a compromise, I'd recommend the trail along 133. But more importantly, I don't think we need this trail at all. I'd like to have you go back. Open Space and Trails has lots of money. They're looking to build, expand, and use that money for trails and recreation. But people come to Colorado to see wildlife, to know that it's there, to protect it. And from what Kevin Wright, the wildlife officer, said, that our bighorn sheep are imperiled and on decline, and that while CPW, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife, that did a study of this and said there wouldn't be much impact, they didn't have the money to even really do a thorough study, from what I read. And so we have to really consider what we're doing with fragmentation of the land. Building more trails is just going to increase these bandit trails. And I would suggest that we go back to the starting board and not build the trail, number one, and if you had to compromise, keep it on the highway 133.
Thank you.
I think our board needs to leave here in a minute. I think we can stay for another 15 minutes and compress our budget work session, but we'll be leaving in 15 minutes, so if you could keep your comments brief, we could hear as many people as we can. Thanks.
Thank you. So we have Diane Kinney, Patrick Hunter, Dorothea Ferris.
Hi.
Hi, I live in the Crystal Valley for more than 30 years, and I'm not so sure about the trail, but I think that there's a good process in place, and I appreciate everyone who's working on that process, and I want to support the process. And I also believe in public access to public land. And I do want to say I appreciate the concern for wildlife tonight. And the Crystal Valley is suffering right now. The wildlife is suffering, not because of this trail, but because of private ownership by basically one person who owns more than 30 properties. And there are gates that come up to the middle of my forehead, and I'm 5'6". So if you care about wildlife, please pay attention to that. I've been a voice in the wilderness trying to call attention to that, because it's heartbreaking. I wonder about if everything needs to be a biking trail. Can we talk about a trail just that people can walk on? Does it have to be biking? And so those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. Patrick Hunter, Dorothea Ferris, Mike Pritchard.
So I have some questions, actually. That is, I understand that the governor had an idea that Colorado should have more trails. Am I correct?
You know, we'll capture your question, but we're not going to respond to you. We haven't got time.
Okay. Basically my questions revolve around the idea of it's nice to have these meetings, it's nice that people come and express their opinions, but who's making the decisions?
We'll capture your responses.
Okay. And that's not been made clear. Obviously, there's a lot of money to be spent. I don't know whose money it's going to be. Secondly, there's jurisdictional issues. We who live in Carbondale are not in Pitton County. And this trail, as I understand it, is going to be built, at least the section we're talking about tonight, is in Pitton County. And, you know, I don't know whether a person, people from Carbondale really have any standing, as it, you know, it's an expression used in courtrooms, in terms of, and who votes? Is there a vote? Is it something that can be decided between the Pitton County commissioners and the open space trail? Is that who's going to make the decision ultimately? As far as the overall trail, what we're talking about here today is a trail that's parallel to the Highway 133 because it's in Pitton County. The remainder of the trail, and I've gone to Crested Butte, and I don't know that there's a whole lot of people that are trying to get between Crested Butte and Carbondale on foot or bikes or in horses. I didn't see any when I was out there. And yeah, so there's a perfectly good route that exists right now. People bike that road. And by the way, safety concerns, this gentleman mentioned that these intersections are more dangerous apparently than the highway. How many bike car accidents have been on 133? I've never heard of one. I've been riding up there for 20 years. One person mentioned Independence, and, you know, that's at least as dangerous, if you will. I mean, can we be concerned about bikers in Faloha Meadows being rammed by the sheep? Is that something that could happen? In any case, I happen to support the idea that wider shoulders would be a good idea. I think that not only improves the biking experience, but it also creates a safer road. And that could be done with CDOT money. I would take it.
Thank you. Dorothea Ferris, Mike Pritchard, Dana Hare-Smith, Hunter-Smith.
Thank you very much, all of you. Very briefly, you know, every one of us in this room is having an impact on the wildlife and on the habitat. Yet I hear a lot more discussion about building more affordable housing than I do about ways to leave the valley and where to go to protect everything. So I think we need to keep in mind that we are growing, we're going to grow, we need to address the issue. And I think the belief is that public land should be accessible to the public. And I think what we need to do is find out how we protect that public land. We keep hearing about there are ways to make sure that people stay on public land, take care of that land, and don't negatively impact it and take care of private land. The report needs to address as many ways as possible that the plan is to do that, because I think all of us who use it want to see the rest of the people take as good care of it as I do, is what everyone says. So I think that needs to be part of the discussion. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mike Pritchard, Dana Howard-Smith, and then Jeff Beer.
Hello, I am Mike Pritchard. I am with the Roaring Fork Mountain Bike Association. Firstly, thanks for this gathering. I think it's very important that we all get together and talk about this. This is a very big, complicated project that I have been watching for about 15 years now. So I'm really grateful that we're now at this level of detail, that we can even be considering exact alignments or alternatives between alignments. I do want to put in perspective that this really is meant to be a regional trail. The reason that it was added to the governor's list of 16 is because that Pitkin County pushed it forward so that we could do this level of planning and see if what would be possible in the future. With that in mind, the Crested Butte to Carbondale, or Carbondale to Crested Butte Trail, it is something that's been worked on for a long time. So we have this segment already that goes to BRB campground, and people have spoken with a certain amount of joy about that just here in the room tonight. Over in Crested Butte, they've been working on it, and they've been working on single track. They are already at Kebler Pass, and they have their approvals, and they're pushing on their way towards Erickson Springs. The Ragged's Trail already exists. We're working with our friends and advocates in Crested Butte and in Hotchkiss and Paonia, and we're looking at how we could maintain and improve that route in the future. So thinking about this segment, we're generally supportive of this trail. Mountain bikers won't necessarily focus on the paved portion from town to Redstone, but they will very much, as soon as possible, love to enjoy the 7 miles that would connect Redstone to McClure Pass. That's going to utilize historic roads in many cases, and the trail construction will be relatively easy. We look forward to bringing volunteers to the table and even funding partners if possible. We'd love to see that portion go forward. For the lower portions, there's a lot of considerations, and we truly appreciate that it's not going to be an easy process. So while we might be focused on recreation experience, we really are very mindful of this wildlife habitat issue. Now, I've heard a lot of talk about seasonal closures and that they just are not effective. And I have to push back on that just a tiny bit, because I'm one of the people who sees the photos each spring of the incursions. And I'll tell you that sometimes it's 3 incursions. It's sometimes 6 incursions. But we're talking about trails that see thousands and thousands of people each summer. So to say that these closures are not effective is not true. I would say that maybe we should have a sign that says $3,000 fine if you get caught. You know, literally these photos do get sent around, and we're trying to see who these people are so we can educate them, maybe pass on a fine, but maybe those fines need to be more serious. So with that in mind, I would just say thanks again for pushing forward on this process. It's a long one, and it's an important one.
Thank you. Dana Smith, then Jeff Beer, then Diane Madigan. Dana still here? Dana? No? Jeff Beer.
Thank you. I've lived up the Crystal River for a long, long time. And it's, in fact, I first remember going up Highway 133, which was a county road in 1951, my father's Buick, with him driving, of course. The highway has changed somewhat since then. And Erica, thank you for a little reminiscing on Wild Rose Ranch. I remember you and Rebecca and all of us gathered sledding down those meadows up there. Great times. Anyhow, over the years, I used to ride McClure Pass from Redstone quite frequently, 2-3 times a week. And I quit doing that after a significant bike wreck and just recovery in the highway. Last year, I rode it again for the first time. And I did notice a major geologic event. That pass has gotten 1,000 feet higher. At least it felt that way. But today, I won't get on the highway on my bicycle. I live a mile from Redstone where I work. I drive back and forth in my car. It's kind of stupid. I should be on a bike riding back and forth to work. But where I live, between the semis, the Ferraris, the Porsches, the motorcycles, the narrowness of the highway, the barriers, it's just too scary. Chuck, I admire you. Or, no, I think you're nuts. Very little traffic anymore, except for major organized rides on Highway 133. Most of the cars, single people driving, we all know that story. I'm one of them. I hate to admit it. But I would love, I'm talking about myself, not the whole community. I'd love to be able to ride a bike from my house to work. I'd love to be able to ride a bike back up to McClure and ride down to BRB. As it stands now, I put my bicycle in the back of the truck, ride down to the BRB, and then get on the bike path down there. I just won't do it. It's too dangerous. Independence Pass, bikers may have a better route up there, but traffic is much, much slower. I mean, there's some speed demons on 133, particularly in front of my house, in front of the castle. That's not my house, but I'm across from it. I mean, I've watched Ferraris try and hit 110 miles an hour in, you know, a quarter mile. So I support a bike trail. I'm not going to say yay or nay on the alignment, but I think it's a worthwhile endeavor. And there have been many, many studies on bike trails that show that property values increase, not greatly, but increase the closer you are to a walking or bike trail. Now, granted, this is in a lot of urban environments, but there still is that factor to consider up here. Anyhow, thanks. Thanks for everybody for coming.
I'd like to thank the Board of Carbondale Trustees for hosting us tonight and spending a little extra time. I know you've got to go into a budget hearing, so I just want to thank you very much for joining us and being part of this process.
Thanks, George. Thanks for coming, everybody. I'm sorry we have to leave, but I also want to respect the staff that put a lot of time into this. So, thank you.
So we have...
Please know the rest of us will remain.
If the Carbondale people want to listen on your way out to what I have to say, I want to directly address the seasonal closure. I live right across from Avalanche Creek. It's Swiss Village. And I go up Avalanche Creek all winter long. There's a dog closure between November and May that's in place. Big signs say absolutely no dogs, critical wildlife habitat. And in the 10 years that I've lived there, increasingly people are violating this all winter long. Last winter was the worst. Almost every week there was a fresh set of dog prints alongside of human prints. I just got to where I was kind of discouraged. I didn't even want to go up there. It's sad. So I did encounter three different parties with dogs on the wrong side of the closure. And when I talked to them, they were all locals. They all had unleashed dogs with them. And one of the gentlemen, when I asked him if he had seen the signs, he laughed and he said, "I don't read signs." So if you do use alternative B there, that will bring the bike path along the entrance where Avalanche Creek is, I guarantee you, there will be violations. You will give those people two other options. They'll go into the Janeway Meadow, and it's out of sight. There's parking out of sight there. They'll go behind that avalanche hill, and they'll be in Philoa Meadows within a mile. And Philoa Meadows, to anybody that's, you know, used Penny Hot Springs in the winter or 133, the elk and the bighorn love it. The elk are there by the dozens all winter long. The bighorn are there sharing it with them right across from Penny Hot Springs. So it's just a treasure and a marvel, and just those areas, the Janeway Narrows, the Avalanche Narrows, and Philoa Meadows must be kept sacred, and the road has to be alternative A in that area at least. And all the biologists say Red Wine Point to Philoa Meadows, those are the areas to preserve if you want to save wildlife. So, and I'm a mountain biker, that's how I have this, so I'm in favor of the trail. I'll be the first person to use it. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Again, thank you, trustees.
Thank you.
Let's see, we have about a dozen more speakers. Is the board willing to sit through? Okay. Okay. John McCarroll, I think. It's hard to read. Andy Morris, and then Will Roche. John McCarroll here. Andy Morris. Andy Morris.
Will Roush.
Will Roush. Shucks.
Well, my name is Will Roush. I'm the Conservation Director at the Wilderness Workshop. As others have said, I want to thank the board for holding this meeting. I think it's quite clear. Folks really do appreciate the opportunity to speak in a public setting, and I'd encourage you to hold more of these. I might also suggest a field trip might be in order. I want to thank Open Space and Trails for the process so far. With these types of things, more process is generally better, so please consider those. As folks probably know, our organization is focused on protecting wildlife and wild lands. That's our main concern in this issue. But we also appreciate the benefits that a trail up the Crystal Valley would bring. And so in general, we're supportive of that idea of increasing the recreational opportunity there. Our opinion and position on this issue is based largely on the best available science. And to that end, as folks also probably know, we hired one of the state's most respected wildlife biologists, Rick Thompson, to conduct an independent analysis of potential impacts of different trail alignments up the Crystal. The main thing I'd like to say tonight is that Rick's study was not a huge surprise. All the wildlife, all the ecological studies conducted about a trail in the Crystal Valley point to a much greater impact of a trail located away from a highway. In a lot of ways, this isn't a big surprise. When you add a new disturbance or a new development to undeveloped land, the impact is generally greater. Those other studies, in addition to ours, include ones done by the Crystal Valley Caucus, Picken County, and of course, numerous Parks and Wildlife officers have expressed similar opinions. So fortunately, I think there's pretty good consensus on the science. Your most recent report from the consultants, if you look through the different segments, any segment where there's a difference between wildlife impacts, the segment along the highway is always better for wildlife. And for that reason, our organization supports locating the trail generally closer to the highway where it would have much less of an impact to wildlife. I'll share one other small detail from Rick's report. The executive summaries are outside the room and also on our website along with the full report, but Rick's report showed an eightfold increase in the amount of habitat that would be impacted between a near-highway alignment and an off-highway alignment. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that the entire trail should be located along the alignment that he analyzed. That's an older alignment, but I think it points very strongly to a preference, again, to locating this trail in areas that have already been disturbed. The last thing I'll say that I guess touches a little bit on management, be it seasonal closures or other issues. Once a trail like this is built, I think your hope in the communities is that it's probably built in perpetuity. We generally don't get rid of projects that cost tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. And so any mitigation or management upon which the trail is justified and built needs also to be guaranteed in perpetuity. And I think that's a pretty challenging thing to do. The Open Space Trails Board and Picken County has a stellar record of environmental protection, but we need to know that that record will exist not 10 or 20 years into the future, the next reauthorization, but hundreds of years. And I ask you to think really critically about how you would do that, how you would guarantee that in policy and funding.
Thanks, Will. Let's see, Chuck Downey, John Hoffman, David Johnson.
Chuck Downey, I live in Redstone, and this is a unique opportunity because we get to talk to the 10 people sitting now in front of us that are going to be making the final decisions in this. And this is really, I'm really grateful, and I know everybody here is really grateful for the opportunity to have you sitting here listening to us and listening to all the different inputs that we have to make. I guess I really only have one thing to say, and that nobody has taken the time tonight to acknowledge the great job that Benton County Open Space, the staff, the board, and the collection of contractors that they brought together have put before us the tools to choose an alignment. If they hadn't done that, or they had done it poorly, we wouldn't be here tonight. We'd be railing on things that, holy cow, they really didn't even, they didn't get the message. So, to you guys, women, men, thanks lots. We're here because of you. We appreciate you. You've given us the tools to move forward. And I do support a trail up to Crystal.
Thank you. John Hoffman, David Johnson, Jim Kurzbinnick. John left. David Johnson.
My name is Dave Johnson. I live in Redstone. OST has been soliciting opinion for many months, but I think their process is skewed and fatally flawed. Governments at all levels know that if they control the dialogue, they control the issues. Nowhere in these meetings or in the online opinion gathering process has there been an option for residents to oppose any additional building of a path. Wildlife is also not given an option for none of the above, evidently because they don't speak English or have online access. OST has conveniently detracted attention away from the none of the above option to try to focus on where a path should go, like its existence is a foregone conclusion, and has garnered public opinion in a skewed process to gain an answer they're looking for, as many contend. I was initially in favor of a bike path that did not encroach on ancient wintering ground for elk in Janeway, Faloha, and Placida. I've owned a business in Carbondale for 12 years and lived there for 17 years before I bought a home and business in Redstone in 2016. A bike path could actually help my business, but like most people, I moved to Redstone because it's not Carbondale, let alone Glenwood or Denver, which a bike path kind of turns it into. People also visit the Crystal River Valley because it's one of the last relatively undeveloped areas on the western slope. With a push by PITCO and others to designate the Crystal Valley as wild and scenic, why is there this big sudden push to put in a trail, hundreds of people, and thousands of tons of pavement? There is no shortage of bike paths already in the area. The list goes on and on locally, and if you want to bike up 133, the opportunity has always been there, as well as numerous arteries along it. With all the people in this country made homeless by hurricanes in Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico, and now fires in California, why is it such a priority for our government to spend millions and millions of dollars on a bike path in the middle of nowhere? Shouldn't we keep this a relatively wild area that is friendly to wildlife and save our tax dollars for worthy causes nationally for our fellow citizens, or if they might be needed locally for a crisis? Are we that narcissistic and indulgent? I don't think so. Please tell the county commissioners that we care more about wildlife and our fellow citizens than we do about spending a ton of money on a bike path that is not needed. And tell OST in their online surveys that you respectfully choose none of the above.
Thank you. Jim Kurzbinnick, Robert Fullerton, then Daryl Fuller,
Robert Fullerton. I live in Swiss Village. I would like to address seasonal closures first. The avalanche seasonal closure is an absolute failure. I recreate in Avalanche Creek 12 months of the year. The last 2 years, I've removed over 40 illegal burn scars. I removed one homeless camp this year already. As previously been pointed out, homeless people are already utilizing Picken County open space, probably not to the knowledge of anybody on the open space board. You build a trail on the east side of the river, you got Glenwood. You got so many homeless people living out there, you'll never find them. We need options C. We need no trail. Open Space Trail has done a great job of bringing this issue to everybody's attention, but they failed us in their sales pitch. Once I heard God's change of mind, and Pitkin County cost has never been an object. I appeal to the intelligence of this community to do the right thing. If option C comes, the right option, that's that you will make that decision.
Thank you. Daryl Fuller, then Pat Peburn.
Thanks so much for being here. Sorry I couldn't address my live here card now. I'll be a little extra here trying to be brief. One of my favorite things to do is to ride my bicycle in beautiful places. I enjoy the fitness benefits, the challenge. I find the intimacy of riding through landscapes at a pace that allows one to experience the path and the land, its sights and smells, and often come away from these experiences with a renewed sense of appreciation for the beauty of our region. I firmly believe that a trail can be built and managed with deference to nature, wildlife, and the unique vegetation found in the valley. I reject the argument that the construction and existence of such a trail will spell the end of local wildlife populations. For sure they will be impacted, and for sure they need to be impacted, need to be managed carefully. But one that I believe we can manage, and we have many interpretive opportunities to educate people. Impacts on wildlife and natural resources will certainly be far less than what is already imposed by subdivisions and the associated activity of people living along the corridor and the traffic that we all contribute to when we drive up and down the corridor. One way we could improve some of the impacts is, as the humans are having some of these impacts, is to get out of our cars and ride bicycles more often. And I know it's a long distance and not everyone can ride bikes. Some people can walk, jog, but opportunities to connect communities for commuting is something that shouldn't be overlooked. I think that wherever possible, we ought to look at off-highway alignment. I just spent some time riding a bicycle on a bike path that was right along the highway. Perhaps some of you have been on the trail along Highway 128 in Utah, going up the River Road. And I was riding side by side with a friend of mine, and there are sections where you're away from the highway, in the corridor, but away from the highway. It was quite pleasant. We were able to have a conversation. And there were sections where we were right on the side of the highway, cantilevered out over the river, or right along the highway with just a large, beefy kind of berm, cement structure. And whenever we got close to the highway, we couldn't talk. We couldn't enjoy each other's company because it was really loud. It's just worth noting the user experience. It's not, I think that those technologies may be an important way of mitigating some of the impact in some of the more sensitive areas for the alignment of the trail. But the user experience is significant. And having ridden Highway 33 up and down the Crystal River Valley for the last 17 years, you have to be pretty hardy and pretty willing to be out in fast-moving traffic. It's not an inviting environment for bicycles. So I really appreciate you guys taking comments tonight. I'm excited about the project. I support the work that's been done and look forward to work moving forward.
Thank you. We have Pat Pilbert. Thank you. And then I think we're wrapping up with Bill Aragus.
Well, thanks everyone who's still hanging around here. I appreciate it myself personally because I wanted everybody to know that in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, I used to ride 133 on a bicycle with the coal trucks. Now, maybe most of you don't remember those, but I'll tell you what, talking about scaring the hell out of you, I think I'd take a Ferrari rather than the coal trucks. However, 133 is not my issue. My issue is my husband and I and our boys have lived in the Crystal River Valley for 44 years. And we live right at the end of the marvelous, wonderful bike trail from Carbondale to the KOA campground, which I'm trying to say KOA campground. It's not the BRB anymore, folks. And right beyond our area, which has 50 acreages, 50. That means that there are at least 50 people who live up there, but really there are probably 150, maybe more people. There are only about 25 of us who take the time to walk up the old railroad road where the water line is coming from Nettle Creek. We used to be able to walk all the way up to Nettle Creek. We can't now because a rich person closed off the trail with a big elephant fence. This is probably impacting some of the animals who were using that road themselves. I want you to know that when everybody who is a biker or anybody else who thinks, oh, we'll just put a path, we'll just build the trail on the present railroad bed. I want you to know that where we walk, it is like heaven. It is like a tropical forest with birds all over the place, all kinds of different species of birds. We still see the riparian activity, ospreys, blue heron, right just down on the Crystal River, in this simple little patch of freedom. We see bear scat, we see all kinds of other animals. I just want you to know that this will be terribly impacted by any kind of humanity riding bicycles. I love bicycles. However, I want you to consider the impact not only of humans who live right there, but the animals. The animals won't survive it. They're very shy, but they accept us if we're quiet and good stewards.
Thank you. Thank you. Bill Erdis? Bill still here? Is there anybody that I missed? Well, I just want to say that given such a large group and such a diverse opinions, I just really want to acknowledge and thank all of you for respecting each other, for respecting this process here tonight. It made it really pleasant for me. Someone said, you know, I'm glad I'm not taking heat, but we guys are. I don't feel like we're taking any heat at all. We're here to listen, to learn, to get your input, and I think it's been a really productive, valuable evening, and I hope you all feel the same. So thank you so much. Thank you.